There's no touchdown. There's a flag on the play. And then the referees all, they're like, run for the tunnel real fast because the visiting team wins and the whole home team is just raining down popcorn and peanuts and drink, dumping their drink. Have you ever seen that happen? Controversial call to end the game. The home team's not happy. The referees just make for the door. Well, today, Jesus has given me a passage, and I'm gonna preach it to you, and then I'm going to duck my head, and I'm going to run for the door because it's horrible. It's hard, and I don't know what we're going to do with it, but maybe there is something in here today. And I thank Taylor for having the courage to read it, and the Grace is one of our youth as a senior this year. And we just thank all of our youth for being in the church today. Well, if you remember, the last time I was up here, Jesus went to the home of a Pharisee on the Sabbath, and there was a man in need of healing. He asked, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And the Pharisees, they hemmed and they hawed, and they didn't answer. And Jesus said, oh, you're all wet, you know, and he healed them anyway, sent the man on his way. And he told them also that when you throw a banquet, don't invite your friends because you'll be paid back. Invite the crippled and the blind and the poor. So that's pretty much what I preached on last week. Don't invite your friends to the banquet because they'll pay you back. Instead, invite the poor, the crippled, and the lame. Heal in action. Don't bicker about who to heal and when to heal them. That was last week's message. Well, that was last week. Thankfully, for those of us who like to keep it fresh, the lectionary, which is sort of the list of scriptures that a lot of churches follow in terms of what to preach, they skipped a story of the banquet parable where the invited guests gave excuses why they couldn't come. You maybe remember that story. There's a certain man and he throws a banquet and he invites everybody and they say, I can't come because I have a couple of oxen I need to test out because I have a new field I have to check on. I can't come to the banquet. So the owner says, go out. He tells his servants, go out and invite everybody off the streets and come in. And but you know, the message would have been to go out to those in our community, our society, who weren't invited and invite them into the banquet. But that gets so tiresome. Aren't you tired of hearing me preach about that? Don't expect people to pay you back. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Invite the poor. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sit with them at meals. Blah, blah, blah. Yada, yada, yada. Blah, blah, poor. Blah, blah, blah. Together. Blah, blah, blah. Blessed. It's cute, isn't it, that our pastor likes to talk about those things? He's so idealistic. But what you want to know is how I'm supposed to live my life with the things that are really personally important to me, like family. What are some really practical things that the Bible can help me with in my family life? And you're in luck, because today Jesus talks about family. You've come to the right place. You come here to church on Sunday mornings because going to church is important. And the one that we worship in church is Jesus. In fact, have you read on your bulletin, the front of the bulletin? It's kind of small print. Maybe it should be bigger print in the future, especially when I call it out. Do you see what the mission statement is there on the front of your bulletin, underneath John 3:16, right above the date? Our mission is, let's read it together, to make disciples of Jesus for the transformation of the world. All right, so our purpose is to make disciples, to be refreshed by fellowship, to work for God in worship, to tell God that our relationship with God is most important, to tell Jesus that we want to be Jesus' disciple, to hear the scriptures proclaimed, and hopefully maybe we'll grow in our faith. In fact, this morning I think we feel pretty good. We've managed yet again to fit church into our busy lives. This week, we've been shopping, we've prepared and eaten food, we watched some football for social enjoyment. By the way, I know you were wondering, Kalamazoo College beat Oberlin, that's my alma mater, in their opener, 3-0. So, go Fighting Hornets. I know you've been keeping up with that. Back to this. Some of us have done some physical fitness to keep our bodies healthy. Some of us have given back to the community this week. We have gotten the kids through another day to all their practices and doctor's appointments. And now, in slot number 59 for the week, we made it here to church. So, very good. And I wonder, those of you that made it to church, did you wake up thinking, I'm going to church because it's Sunday? Or did you wake up saying, I want to be a disciple of Jesus in the world. I will follow Jesus wherever Jesus leads. Which one? I would imagine that most of us, including me, when I opened my eyes this morning, I said, I gotta go to church and preach again. Anyway, we are reminded this morning that a disciple is more than a learner, more than a student. I can learn about math or English. I can learn about the Quran and not be a Muslim, right? I can study aerodynamics and airplanes and not be a pilot. Aren't you glad that when you get on a plane and go someplace else, the pilot says, I've never done this before, but I've got a great flight simulator at home, and I've learned a lot. I can look up a symptom on WebMD and not be a doctor. If you were going into surgery, you wouldn't want to hear your surgeon say, they didn't know how exactly to do this, but they watched a YouTube video, so... No, a disciple is more than a learner. A disciple is a follower, an apprentice, a protege, one who commits to that way of life, one who is willing to walk into whatever situation the teacher walks into and practice the things that the teacher does and says. Now, maybe after hearing this, you're still thinking, I get it. I am a disciple and I want to follow Jesus more and more every day. And I know Jesus said we're to invite everybody to church, poor, rich, sinner, righteous. There's room for everyone. Now, please, I get that. Would you just tell me what Jesus says about ordinary life? Like about family life, where I spend most of my time. And Pastor Ed, you are using up precious sermon time. I've given you exactly 20 minutes to teach me how to be a disciple this week, and you've already used up like 8 of them. So I'll say, well, I would like to tell you how to be a disciple. It's right here, but I'm not sure you want to hear it. Not what Jesus had to say today, because I'm not sure I understand what Jesus had to say today. I'm certainly not sure I know how to teach it to you. I wrestle with it myself. It's a very hard teaching, like Miss Pam said, one that I'm not sure I know what to do with. So you say, Pastor Ed, stop with the humble show. You're smarter than you think you are. That's what Christopher Robin would tell Winnie the Pooh. You tell me that. You're smarter than you think you are, Pastor Ed. Come on, let's hear it. The church loves its families. We are Christian. We've been a church for almost 200 years. We love Jesus, so bring it. Bring the word. And I might say again, are you sure? For being a disciple is much different than learning about the Christian faith. What if you discover that it costs too much to be a disciple? What if you discover that you'll have to make hard decisions? Maybe decisions like you've never had to make before in your life, like whether to stand up in front of the congregation and sing a solo about putting your whole self in and your whole self out. What if we discover it will cost too much? I mean, in real life, we've had to make choices like that before. We want a car with certain features, but when we see the price tag, we decided that's too much of an investment for us. Or our kids want to go to an amusement park, but a recent medical procedure just drained our savings account. So we'll just have to have a staycation. We hear the church proclaim the Christian discipline of tithing, of giving 10% of our income in gratitude for what God has done for us, right off the top, before we pay other bills. But life is just so expensive right now, and the stock market is doing so good. Maybe if we left it in our stock market account for a while longer, we'll be able to do even more good later. Then we'll see if we can afford to give. Well, we can still fit discipleship in. Maybe we'll just do a little bit of discipleship. Yes, that will be fine. We can manage that without too much trouble. Just a little bit. Church meets on Sunday morning. So far, the kids' soccer games don't happen on Sunday morning. Rotary isn't till Thursday. Yes, we can fit in a little discipleship into our schedule on Sundays at 11. So we're ready. Let's hear a little lesson on discipleship. Maybe one that talks about family life. I just have to say before I do, this might be like a big disruption. You see, when you're a disciple, you get thrown into situations, you encounter teachings that it seems we're not ready for. You know, sooner or later, a new police officer, let's say, will find themselves in a dangerous situation and there's no book to consult. Sooner or later, a doctor is doing a routine procedure, but the patient has some unfamiliar, undetected condition, and it reacts suddenly and adversely and might not make it. And then, where do you turn? You know, I can learn about forgiveness stories by watching the Hallmark Channel, but it gets real. Hey, don't knock it. It gets real when a coworker sabotages my project and I have to decide how to confront her, she who has become my enemy. I can say grace before a meal, but when a hurricane blows my house to smithereens and I can't inhabit the island I used to live on, then what? Can I still pray the Lord's Prayer as a disciple, trusting that God will give me my daily bread? A disciple is one who willingly takes on whatever the master might have in store, seeking first and foremost to learn from the master. So this teaching from our master, I'm not sure how we are going to take it, or understand it, or like it, or be able to follow it. I think we will want to fall back to what we know. I think we'll want to retreat into familiar territory. I think we'll want to dismiss it as a fluke. I think we'll want to choose to fit in some other facet of our faith. This teaching of Jesus says what to do if we want to be Jesus' disciples. But, you know, really, there are lots of teachings on discipleship. Maybe we can just do one of the easier ones, like in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus tells us to pray in secret and not to be showy and grandstand your prayers. We can certainly fit that one into our lives. We can do that at a restaurant. Jesus says, pray in secret. We can pick up that fajita, and we can say a prayer. Dear God, thank you for this fajita, without moving our lips and without closing our eyes, in secret so no one knows, before we take a bite. That's a good bit of discipleship. We can be a good secret prayer disciple. We can fit that one in. If we don't like this one that we read this morning, maybe we can just set this one aside in the file behind the other ones, in the folder marked good ideas that we haven't gotten to yet. But. What if? What if this is the most important one, the one that Jesus tells us today about how to be a disciple? What if Jesus wants us to know this one so badly that he was willing to give his life so we would be able to comprehend it? I think I'm ready to share it now. Here it is. Jesus is recorded in Luke chapter 14. And Taylor, you read this before. Now large crowds were traveling with him. And he turned and said to them, whoever comes to me and does not hate their father and mother, their wife and their children, their brothers and their sisters, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Who does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you intending to build a tower doesn't first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when you've laid the foundation, you're not able to finish. All who see it will begin to ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. So therefore, none of you can be my disciples if you do not give up all your possessions. So there it is. I'm done. I'm going to run out to the... right? I hope you know I didn't write that myself. I read what it says that Jesus said. I told you it was hard. I confessed it wasn't just rhetorical. I'm not sure what to do with it. I'm not sure I can follow it. Well, there's a Duke professor named Stanley Hauerwas. He's a maverick of sorts, one of those people that often says things to be bold and shocking, albeit he's a Christian and he's a professor in the Divinity School, and he backs them up with Christian faith. But he gave a sermon titled, quote, hating mothers as the way to peace, unquote. You wouldn't let me preach that sermon, probably, if I were to say that. But did you hear? He's not that far off from what Jesus said. If you want to be my disciple, you must hate your mother, hate your children, and I'm confused, and I really don't want to share this text. Now, Dr. Hauerwas's premise was that as human beings, we often fight one another, not because we're attacking our enemy, but because we're trying to protect something that we love. Kids on a playground, they can deal with a whole lot of teasing, but when you insult my mama, the fists go up and they start to fly, right? Nations with armies realized after World War I that soldiers weren't fighting to uphold the national cause. And so they devised a way to put the soldiers into platoons where they became friends with their foxhole buddies. And they would fight to the death to protect their buddy, regardless of the larger national objective. So if we are willing to become violent, Hauerwas says in essence, to protect something we love, if we're willing to destroy our enemy, if it's an either-or situation, maybe by coming to hate our mothers, as Jesus said, we will have to renounce the desire to hurt and kill in the name of protecting that which we love. After all, Jesus didn't call down heavenly armies on the ones that were seeking to persecute his disciples. He taught them to love those who persecute you. And that's kind of Dr. Hauerwas's argument. And that's a hard teaching, and I still don't know what to do. I guess it doesn't have to be set in such a dire context. Even in the parsonage, which is the house that the church has and that you let me live there. As a minister of the gospel, sometimes I find myself imagining how difficult it would be to give shelter to a needy person because of the disruption it would impose on my teenager who I love. I love my teenager, and I would choose, and I do choose, to sort of give him a comfortable existence, maybe at the expense of someone else that needs shelter. Now, if I were to tell you that, most of you would console me. And you would say, look, Pastor Ed, that's your first priority, your kids, who you love. And you would say other very reasonable things, like, you can't invite the whole city into our parsonage. But Jesus' message says, I need to take up my cross if I want to follow and be his disciple. He says, I need to give away all my possessions if I want to be his disciple. It seems too much, but he said it nonetheless. He also said, Dr. Hauerwas said, that oftentimes major disruptive forces realign our lives. We've seen on the news this week, Hurricane Dorian has taken towns and reduced them to rubble. That has obliterated so many houses, we don't know how many people are even missing. We experienced this with Hurricane Katrina and some other natural disasters. Many times the survivors, they deal with numbness and despair, even guilt for surviving, and who can blame them? Many times they emerge eventually, though, through their grief with a new appreciation for what is important. Before the storm, these folks, not different from you and me, tried to fit a lot of things into their lives that now, in light of the disruption, no longer seem very important. But the storm, or if you're in a war, the bombs, or if you're diagnosed with something, the diagnosis changes everything. And now, after the numbness subsides, the pain of grief has been worked through, perhaps a person restored to a new normal or some sense of wholeness appreciates every human interaction and savors simple things, because that disruption has changed everything. And maybe, Hauerwas says, Jesus and deciding to follow is that kind of disruption. I don't understand it, this teaching of Jesus. It's like a word hurricane. It's like a word bomb. It seems to destroy everything. It seems, this teaching does, like it would create havoc in our very lives. Hate your brother, hate your mother, hate your children. My goodness. But then again, Jesus knew what he was saying. The church has been living on with it for millennia. Whoever doesn't hate their family, even their own life, can't be my disciple. Somebody told me once that Jesus said, if I wanted to find myself, I'd have to lose it. Maybe somehow that's what Jesus is saying here in a different way. Jesus does not want us to destroy our families through hate. That is not what Jesus is saying. I think rather he's saying that if we have been choosing things that are dear to us at the expense of those that aren't dear to us, that if we want to be Jesus' disciple, we need to somehow stop making that distinction. And we need to love those that we have to learn to love with the same fervor that we have loved our families naturally. The distinction between some extension of family that we hold close and strangers that we keep at arm's length, that distinction starts to fall away. It might cost us. It might cost us everything. But when we are spent and poured out, we'll discover what we couldn't just learn about in a book. We'll discover not that we believe the Bible like we know the knowledge, but that we are a disciple. We'll find that our church becomes the harbor in the midst of a stormy world. We'll find that we are peace in the midst of a world at war. We will have lost the lives we thought we were living, where we just tried to fit in a little church each week. And we will find our true life, the life we are created to live in Christ, who we worship as Lord. We'll discover the testimony of even more friends and family than we already have, who come looking for sanctuary, who one day will say, that's the place where I went when I was in trouble, and they took me in just like family when I needed it most, right from the start. And they'll know we are Christians. They'll know we are disciples, not because of who we hate, but because of who we love. I told you it was a hard word. I told you I didn't want to preach it. Every ounce of my being is telling me to run through that door right now and call the service over and to just go home for a week. But Jesus said it for a reason, and I pray that God will continue to work and penetrate our hearts, to teach us what God would have us to know about what it means to follow him, and that in following him, even if it costs us everything, that we would discover who we were truly meant to be, and they'll know that we are Christians, not by who we hate, but by who we love. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.